Hi, welcome to Together Equal, Diversity Made Simple, hosted by me, Sarah Edmash.
And myself, Andrew Milne.
Today, we'll be doing things a little bit differently. We're going to be talking about what we've learned so far from all the guests that we've had on the podcast to date. So, Andrew, why don't we kick off? What tip have you heard so far that has resonated with you the most?
Thank you, Sarah. So I think the best tip I heard was the most basic one from Andrew at Jersey Electricity, which was the coffee in the exec room analogy, whereby, you know, the execs kind of didn't realize that they had the good coffee and all the other workers on the ground essentially had like the bad coffee and they didn't see a problem with it. I think that's a great metaphor for lots of things in the workplace these days. Like, you know, some people at a certain level kind of get the better benefits, whereas the workers who are on the ground floor, on the front line, tend to, you know, get the basic ones when they're the ones who kind of need a bit more support in their everyday life. And just by making that change, it kind of highlighted, you know, a certain level of, you know, it's a bit dramatic to say inequality, but essentially there's a difference between the two levels. And, you know, the workers were made to feel that difference. You know, we've got the bad coffee, they've got the good coffee. So I think for me, that metaphor and the whole resonated the most. How about yourself?
I'm spoilt for choice. I've got two. One is more of an inspiration. I found Farhana really inspiring, how she has broken down so many barriers. She's at that point of intersectionality where she's combating race, religion, being a woman, and how she talks about she's not going through ceilings. She is breaking down doors. She's going through them, and then when she gets through them, she's holding them open for other women like her to follow through. So the fact that we talk so much about tips and what we can do, and, you know, there's a lot of debate about diversity and inclusivity, but it almost feels, and then the reason we do this is because we want to be giving people actionable tips, right? But one thing that's kind of a no-brainer and should be done, but I don't think we do well enough as a society, is just supporting each other. And you know, that's what Farhana never forgets. She's doing that every minute of every hour of every day. So I found that amazing. But I guess that's not so much a tip. I think the tip that really resonated with me was the one from Mitch, where he talks about, I think it's more of an inclusion thing. It's diversity and inclusion go hand in hand. It's not just about having that representation in the room. It's about making sure that representation is heard. And I know that he's doing it with his youth board or youth committee or his team of youth, young people.
Youth squad, I think they want to call themselves.
Yes, so the team of young people that are like a sounding board, and they share their ideas and thoughts so that they are, whatever he's implementing is coming from the people he's trying to help. And I think that's so transferable to the corporate world. I think that would be my best tip. So regarding everything, is there anything that we've heard that has changed your view? Or have you noticed anything particular from the conversations we've been having?
That's a good one. And, you know, I was thinking about it this morning, and I've kind of noticed, and it's a bit of a generalization and a bit of a binary viewpoint to have, but when you look at the people who you talk to about diversity and what it means to them, there's an almost generalized view about what it does mean based on their background. So, for example, if somebody's got intersectionality as like a key trait to themselves, they tended to want to open the door, but also open the door and keep it open for other people as well. Whereas if somebody's from a more binary background, so, you know, if we generalize here and say like a cis white male, their view of a diversity was kind of almost just, let's get more women into, you know, women in the workplace, for example. So depending on your background, your priority, you know, changes as to what diversity could mean. Where, and, you know, taken to the third level, if you look, for example, people of color, they were more interested, or their motive was creating opportunity for the future, as it were. So I think, you know, again, making a bit of a generalization binary, I think you can kind of see what people want from diversity based on how they appear, which, you know, it's kind of counterintuitive to what we're meant to be doing. But, you know, I thought that was quite an interesting way to look at things about, you know, what motivates people based on their own experience and why they want to get involved. in diversity and inclusion. So how about you?
I think you're absolutely right. I think it's very interesting. And I guess the learning from that learning or insight would be to be able to engage with more people on the same basis. So if we know what is a motivating factor or what resonates with them, that's how you get in the door and start having that conversation about diversity, inclusivity and broadening it out.
Yeah.
And I think that goes into what I've noticed. I'm not sure notice is, it's hardly Sherlock Holmes-like genius. but what I've noticed is everybody has said, just talking about it, everybody, yeah. Listen, talk, sound people out, have, you know, whether you're doing, Sadie was doing her event with Crayola to Mitch's youth board, to Andrew's test and flip and test. It was all about talking, listening, hearing, actioning, and that kind of that model. And I think, yeah, that's why we're here, because that we just need to keep talking about it and talking about it. I kind of have a concern from it that at the moment I feel like we're talking to people, we're preaching to the choir.
Yes, yeah, that's the other thing that I noticed, or that's all we're about as well, is that are we not saying the right thing? So I don't think there's ever going to be, you know, 100% the right thing to say, but are we following what we should be saying and educating people in the way that we feel they should be educated? But then are we representing the version of right we think it is, rather than giving other people the opportunity to present what the actual truth is? Which I think kind of just gone into like a different little rabbit hole.
Well, no, but what you've just basically said. So we are doing this. Yeah. We're trying to deliver information, but we're not listening to the people we want to reach. So in our own way, we're not being inclusive. And I just don't know how one solves that. We're just trying to get the conversation started and going. But I don't know whether we're talking to the people that we really want to be talking to. And I don't know how you fix that.
No, that's a good point. And the other thing, you know, going on to musings again, is that sometimes people are kind of reluctant to tell their story or to share their experience because they don't want to be the flag bearer. Is that right? Is that flag bearer or pole bearer? No, because that's a funeral. Sorry. They don't want to be the representative for, you know, what they feel they might represent in their community, because it's a lot of pressure to be the voice of your community. Like, I'm used to start talking about, you know, gay issues, because I'm like, I've had a pretty, you know, laissez-faire experience when it comes to being gay. I was like riding the golden wave, I call it, between the Section 28 repealing and, you know, the freedom of visualization on TV, for example. But then when I look back at my teen years and I watch the programs that I was watching on TV, and at the time, you didn't even think about it, but there were so many homophobic jokes, you know, taking it to the royal family, for example, like the character that Ralph Little played got his hair cut and he was called the gay boy for it. And then I look back at that and think that's probably, you know, one of the reasons why there was so much internalized, not self-loathing, but such internalized non-acceptance of self when I was younger, because, you know, if you have your hair cut, you're classed as a gay boy. So any form of self-care, you get criticized for. And, you know, the representation in the media is all that sort of like negatives experience. So you're never really comfortable being who you are, because you're going to face criticism. But then, you know, taking that to the next level, being part of the zeitgeist at that point has then allowed us to now become normal nowadays. Well, I say normal in, you know, the most possible way, mainstream in terms of the media representation. So it's kind of like you kind of have to get kicked to the ground in popular culture to then build yourself up to be accepted into society in a way. You know, if you look at humor, is the best way to do that. There's always the butt of the jokes. And that rotates through the period and time, right? So like I said, the gays were kicked down in the media. But then through having those programs, you got programs like Gimme, 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 probably not the best example, but, you know, that again was all about the jokey side of it all. But that allowed us to then move into programs like Will and Grace, which then showed actually there's more to the relationship. And it kind of then snowballed into now where, you know, programs nowadays where, you know, It's a Sin, for example, it's set in the 80s. It's now mainstream, and it's not all about the comedy of being gay. It's about the relationships, how different communities in the gay community work together, and it's kind of promoting them. But then now, you know, you're looking at the issues that trans people are facing, and they're the ones bearing the brunt of society, and they're the ones fighting just to be recognized as being human. So it's quite difficult to get culture and society on your side, but then it's also fascinating to see how the zeitgeist does change, and, you know, how things are going to be different towards working on that acceptance journey. So, you know, I think I've kind of gone off on a random tangent there, but yeah, that's kind of like my musings of the question.
I don't think it's a random tangent. I think the whole, your experiences and everything that you've said, when I'm listening back, basically, although the media have almost vilified a group of people, that group of people have then taken control.
Yeah.
It's empowered them so to find their own voice and to take that humour that was being, take the humour that they were being laughed at and owning that and laughing at themselves, which is not necessarily a way that we want society to work, but they, people have felt empowered to do that. And then in doing that, they have changed the world and perceptions. But I hope that what we're doing means that people can almost leapfrog that whole piece of being vilified and laughed at and then having to take ownership of that and just go straight to taking ownership of the conversation, feeling empowered, speaking up. That you are very right. I'm talking to potential guests, there's a lot that there's, and I don't want to really be gender specific, but I have noticed that women are less prepared to come and speak about things because they don't feel confident enough, whereas men do feel more confident, and they, you know, they feel empowered to speak, which is great. And it'd be great to see more women speaking up. And there are some people who are very, very vocal, like you said. And then I've just gone off on a tangent.
Welcome to my world. Nothing but a motive of tangents. But that kind of takes me to, you know, one of the questions that you asked me before is like, you know, what do you notice? And, you know, with you just saying that, I think on the whole, women tend to want equality more than anything. Like they want to be treated the same in the workplace. So, you know, same access to XYZ, same pay and so on. So it's kind of just trying to get that. So that's quite, you know, a good point that you mentioned there.
Yeah, and I think within that, I mean, we haven't got there in this podcast, but as a society, there's the fragmentation within groups. So, I mean, women, there are so many women's issues that need to be covered and talked about. And it's like now that there is a voice, we've got a voice and we are at the table. There's lots of splinter groups and it's just trying to make sure that the message is coming across loud and clear and that we are supporting each other. Because I just feel very much like, you know, if we're not on message, if one person is talking about a key message, say menopause, for argument's sake, but another one is talking about period poverty, there is kind of a disconnect. They're like, no, that's not my lane, so I'm not going to get involved. But we should be supporting each other more. And I don't mean just women, I mean across.
No, but it's two sides of the same coin, right? Our motivations, I say our battles, but our motivations are different. But eventually we're fighting for the same thing, you know, just from different perspectives. On that side, I just thought of a fun fact when you said about the women, but women back in the day, and when I say back in the day, I mean around the 1900s, they drove the invention of the bicycle because it was an opportunity for them to have freedom because they didn't have to rely on their husbands to get around. And it also led to changes in fashion too, so that women were able to cycle on a bike without having to wear, you know, for example, the hoop skirt and the fashionable clothing at the time. So the bicycle was driven by women's need for freedom and independence. Just so you know. We know now, and that's, I've obviously paraphrased that rather dramatically, but essentially it just kind of goes to show, you know, that you know, society can be driven, and, you know, elements that you didn't even think about are driven by elements of society that you didn't notice as well. I don't know what I meant by that, but yeah.
So before we wrap up, because this is supposed to be short and snappy, do you have any other thoughts that spring to mind?
I think the initial thought that I have is how my language has now changed from using the word diversity to now going towards the word inclusion. And this was from somebody that we spoke to. And I never really thought about it because, again, you know, when you say, what does diversity mean to you? I'm like, okay, so diversity is the outwards, you know, from my point of view, it's the outward inclusion as well.
Yeah. So diversity means, so it's what the point, going back to Mitch saying, it's not about having the people in the room. It's about those people feeling heard and like they have a platform and that they are contributing to the whole conversation.
Yeah. So don't focus on diversity, focus on inclusion instead. And I've started to use that language, you know, in my day-to-day job as well. When somebody says to me, we need to have more gender diversity, I'm like, no, we need to have more gender inclusion as our operative. And I'm now encouraging other people to use the word inclusion rather than diversity. So yeah, that my takeaway from this season is you want to create inclusion, not diversity.
I think that's a really interesting point. I almost wonder whether we ought to change this from diversity made simple to inclusion made simple. Anyway, we can talk about that. Anyway, listeners, thank you for tuning in to this week's podcast, Together Equal Diversity Made Simple. Tune in again to listen to our guests and their simple tips on how to make diversity simple in the workplace.